This week, the Clarets kick off another Premier League campaign with a home tie against Brighton. This is the None and Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to another season of the No Name Never podcast. We are back, listeners, back for your weekly analysis of everything Clareton Blue. And goodness me, how time flies. We are now in our 10th season, 365 episodes of our little podcast. And as of recording this, over 350,000 downloads. Listeners, thank you for your support over the years. It's very, very good to be back, and it's very, very good to be back at Turf Moor. Before we get kicking off this week, we have some housekeeping news to let you know. The No Name Never family is expanding this season. Now, if you didn't see this on social media, do go and check this out. Because as well as your podcast team, who will be bringing you the analysis show every Tuesday and the preview show every Friday, we are joined by some familiar faces. Our previous and founder host, Jamie Smith, along with ex-producer Adam Howarth, will be issuing you with a weekly newsletter. If you want to know all about that, please go to noneandever.substack.com, where you can subscribe to some news articles, FPL news, quizzes, and lots of fun things right into your inbox every single Monday. The podcast team, which is obviously why you are here right now, is also expanding. Is it expanding? Unfortunately, we did lose Liam last year, who has... what's the expression? Joined us to pursue other avenues. But, you know, he was just getting himself really, really busy with Liam. So he's had to step down to concentrate on some other things in his life. Our good buddy George will be, of course, stepping up and replacing him with Clarets Trust News. But in terms of panel members, we are delighted to welcome Adam Dennett, who regular listeners will remember as our Fantasy Premier League runner-up last season. And for those of you who did watch it and listen to it in the summer, our current Pub Master Champion. Adam's not on this week, but he will be joining us probably next week and will be replacing Liam on the panel. So we are absolutely delighted to have him. For those of you who haven't yet checked out the Pub Master quiz, please do. Hosted by the voice of Turf Moor, Phil Bird. He has gone through, I think it was about three or four heats and a semi-final and a final, where we submitted our very own Tom Whittaker as our known and ever representative and pitted his wits against lots of fans to see essentially Adam be crowned the Pub Master Champion. A lot of fun, all good. So, there we go. Housekeeping matters over and done with. It feels like riding a bike. After my summer off, I feel like I've slotted straight back into it. So here we are. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me on the analysis this week is Richard Steele and George Poole. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Good morning, all. welcome back, listeners. I hope you had a happy return to Turf Moor. Just shame it was ruined by two late goals.
Oh, don't. This is going to be terrible. I was really hoping, Rich, this week that we would have a very excited, buoyant start to the season, but it wasn't to be. But let's save that. We'll get into that in a minute. George, how are you after your 450,000-hour journey to get up to Turf Moor yesterday? Was it worth it?
Yeah, of course it was. It was really good to be back on, even though, obviously, the defeat in the end. But to be honest, it doesn't really matter. First game, it doesn't really matter about the result. Just getting back on, seeing old faces, seeing some new faces, just little routines. Yeah, it just, the way I could describe it was, it felt like, it did feel like 20 months since I'd last been on, but it also felt like yesterday. You just slot right back into it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, that's really true, actually. Now, Rich, you and I both were lucky enough to get ballot tickets for the Liverpool game, which we were just so excited to get back on. But even have to go into the Liverpool game yesterday just felt very different, didn't it? It felt properly like we were back.
Yeah, the Liverpool game was a strange one, wasn't it, really? I was sitting in a completely different area to where we're normally sitting. One thing I was really looking forward to, and thankfully it happened for me, was seeing faces that I've sat near, you know, for 20 years. The lad who's similar age to me, he's had a little baby during lockdown. So just aww, little things like that, which is nice, you know. It is more than the 90 minutes of just the game itself. And Liverpool felt very COVID-y, if that makes sense. It was like big queues, checks, COVID passes. But yesterday was just great. I go into the Foundation Club before the game. Me and my dad, that's our rituals. We went in there, watched the United game, which was good fun to watch. Had a couple of pints, and then obviously went onto the turf. And you know, the atmosphere pre-game and the reception Dice got really gave, you know, made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And the start we got with that Tarkowski goal and the way we played, you felt like it was going to be a real special afternoon. But like I said before, I just went a little bit sour.
Yeah, it did. George, I think there's some good things to, I guess, the match day experience itself. There's been quite a lot of changes to turf itself. But there were some good things that we've kept. Obviously, I heard you had a Benny and Hot at halftime, which I think was obviously a good thing to keep up there. How did that feel?
Yeah, it was lovely to just be back under the concourse, really. Obviously, walking over there and getting onto the concourse and everyone's just the sort of hustle and bustle. And obviously, it feels weird at first, but you quickly slot back into it. And then, obviously, just buying pre-match refreshments. And it was just like, that's it. It just felt back to normal and just enjoying times again, really, which is really nice.
What did you think about the stadium improvements? I was really impressed. I know they're not finished yet. I know some fans were a little bit disappointed that you know, we were still starting the season with a few things looking a little bit unfinished. But I was really impressed with what we've done.
I don't know, because I don't think I noticed that much, really. Obviously, around the ground there's the black painting and all that or whatnot, but like all the signage isn't done, and like the refreshments are just exactly the same, just pies. You know, they had pizzas a couple of seasons ago. None of them.
Whoa! No, hang on. Just pies. Pies. These are Holland's meat and potato pies, George. Like, have some respect, Jim, lad.
You know, it just feels like very dated in there. And I think it'd have been a lot better if the advertising boards had obviously been done. And, I presume they'll be getting done before long, because there's no sponsorship boards up at the moment.
I think you might be starting a generational warfare here on the podcast, young George, because like the XG generation want fancy pizzas and all sorts of halftime entertainment. You don't mess with that at turf. You get Benny or not, and you get a pie. Listen, I remember the furore when we got hot dogs. Like, do you know what I mean? Just be careful. But actually, saying that, George, you sit in the Bob Lord, don't you? So I wonder whether you notice this as much. Rich, the, what's it called? The all of the new dugouts and everything, I thought looked really smart.
Yeah, I thought the ground looked quite different, actually. It's funny, people's perceptions of it, isn't it, actually? I really like the black and yellow paint. I think it makes it stand out a little bit. I thought the ground was looking good. Yeah, it's not quite finished yet. I know there's building contractors, because my dad works in that industry, are having issues with getting supplies in.
Yeah.
For one way or another. I think it's good to see those kinds of improvements. Personally, I couldn't give two hoots about what's served in the game as long as you win. I've always said that. I don't care what electronic boards are going round or anything like that. If it brings money in. The one thing that does annoy me, I sit in the James Hargreaves upper. I don't have a clue what time it is. Have a little clock on the other side of the stadium so I can see what time it is. Like, I had no idea what minute Brighton scored in. I actually thought there was longer of the game left, to be honest. But you can see the direction that the new board are wanting to go in. With all the improvements, and obviously it is going to take time. You know, there's a lot of. There has been a lot of mourning on Twitter the last couple of weeks. I've felt more so than normal. And I think it's just a frustration. And I think there is a lot of uncertainty. I know we're going to come on to it. The news about Daz has rattled a lot of people. And I think rightly so. But, you know, I think we are trying to move in the right direction. But it is going to take time. I think Burnley were an old-fashioned club in terms of the infrastructure and all the advertising and the ground type of stuff. And I think Alan Page really wants to bring it into the 21st century, and it is going to take a long time to do it. That's my thoughts on it, really. But
I think they're really good points, actually, Rich. It's like, I think football fans, generally speaking, are quite an impatient bunch. But you know,
people don't like change either. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're all right.
The club's been like it has for so many years. Like, I was speaking to an older lady yesterday, and she doesn't like these changes. Obviously, the cashless is a big one, etc. You know, and all of a sudden we've got new owners, American owners coming in, and I think people are just a little bit scared that they're going to lose the club that they've had for 60-70 years, especially this older generation.
Yeah, and that's a genuine worry, and I think we were very mindful of that when Pearce and his team first brought the club. It's really difficult, because you want You want to bring success to your club. You want to drive it forward. You want to give a better commercial offering. And sometimes, you know, I get a little bit frustrated because there's a regular beef among Burnley fans that there isn't the support there in the transfer window. And obviously yesterday, which we'll come on to, is a prime example of lack of depth in the squad costing us. But then you talk about spending money on players, but at the end of the day, the only investment that the club has at the moment is, well, it's not the only, but predominant income stream is through TV rights. And, you know, if you carry on having to play a small squad and you don't have those flair players that don't entertain, TV companies don't want to put you on the TV, so you're not generating more income from TV rights, you're just getting the bare amount. And if you don't increase your commercial offering and get some investment from outside of those TV deals, then you're not going to have the funds available to increase the playing quality. So you're in a never-ending cycle of problems, and fans sometimes just need to take a step back from that fear and say, well, you want quality on the pitch, you want to stay in the Premier League, you want to see us going forward every season. That's not going to happen with just direct to investment, because no clubs run like that. You know, I get it. I understand people are concerned and nervous, but I think sometimes you just need to take that deep breath and say, well, these changes are going to help us in the long run. But yeah, I agree. I liked the turf yesterday. It did feel, it felt nice. It felt a bit shiny and it felt a little bit more modern. And I think the dugouts particularly look really impressive, because that's one thing I've always felt a little bit like, oh, they look a bit naff. I quite like the fact that there's still wooden seats in the cricket field stand, and away fans moan about that. I think it's great. I think that's your rite of passage when you come to Turf Moor. You sit on wooden seats for 90 minutes and you can like it. But things like the dugout and the advertising boards and the TV, I think, are really good. Anyway, we've gone on a bit of a detour then, away from the game. Let us dive straight into it. I think maybe psychologically I was trying to put this off. But, George, a dream start. Brighton at home. Now, we all said before we saw this game in that whilst you don't want to get too dramatic and talk about must-win games at the start of the season and panic about early losses, the reality of Premier League football is that there are only a certain number of home wins that you have each season to be able to realistically get 3 points from, which is where you get your clause bank. Your points bank from. I went into lawyer mode then. And Brighton at home, a team we fully expect to be around us at the end of the season, is such a team. And I think they started that first half, A, realising that, and B, executing a very good game plan.
Yeah, we were absolutely terrific right from the off, just proper up and at them. You know, as soon as they came out the tunnel, you know, you got the crowd behind them. I know a lot of the players said pre-game they're looking forward to, you know, that roar when they come out the tunnel. I think that was really there to start with, so brilliant to hear. And then it gives the momentum to the players there. You saw Brighton on Friday night, Brentford on Friday night, what the crowd can do. The same with United at home. And it was just getting up and at them. 2 minutes in, getting back to what we're doing best, really. It was really good attacking football, and then to win the corner. And then I think we were threatening from the set pieces all day. I know, like, towards the end, he started catching a few, but it was really good to see that we're still a real threat from the set pieces. And even though it's been a season and a half since we started plonking it on the keeper's head, teams still can't deal with it. And it's just good to see Tarks getting a goal, smiling, and hopefully going to be here for the season.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that, Rich. And I think from all of the post-media reports that I've read about the game, I think there was a common consensus amongst journalists that Brighton, for a good 60 minutes, just could not cope with Burnley's physical dominance, their aerial dominance particularly, and just this counter-attack that they just couldn't deal with. And I guess that's not something you always associate with us.
Yeah, just echo the thoughts George said there. The first half in particular, we were outstanding. You know, you went down to the concourse at half-time and you're speaking to people, and there was just such a buzz about it. As I said, just at the start of the podcast, and it's going to be a brilliant afternoon. But it was just that niggling feeling, weren't there, at the back of your head that, you know, at this level, if you don't take your chances and you don't go 2-0 up, it can come back to bite you. But, you know, there was definitely a lot of positives to take from the game. I thought, what I noticed in the first half was we didn't hoof it up every single time.
No.
Pope got it. You know, we was actually passing it out to me and Tarky a little bit. And, you know, even if we hit it long, we was hitting it into the channels. It wasn't just a long ball. And, you know, we played some really good attacking, high-intensity football. And at times, Brighton couldn't cope with it. Obviously, they had a £20 million signing. I can't... something similar to that, who come from Salzburg. He got dragged off at half-time. He was almost like, wow, this is the Premier League. And as the game went on, you're seeing it slowly, just getting away from us. They were starting to get more joy down our left-hand side. And there was almost a sense of a bit of inevitable when that ball come across and they scored. So that's just a really disappointing thing, is that we were so dominant, at least in the first half. And then even the start of the second half, we was on top of them. And then you're going back to corners. First half, the corners were excellent. We got them away from the goalie, didn't we?
Yeah, and then the second half,
but then second half, we went back to our old tricks. Corner straight at the goalie. He's caught it. They score from a counter. I was just screaming, me, bring him down, foul him. Do you know, like when Bissouma was getting away, they let him go through and next minute it's in back of your net and you go, bloody hell.
Yeah.
It's happened again.
I think the corners were even more frustrating by the fact that their goalkeeper was flapping as hell, George. I mean, he looked absolutely terrified in that first half. And we just, we shouldn't be giving him easy spots in corners there. It's not that difficult to figure that out.
True, but just play devil's advocate. For the Tarkowski goal, that's right in the keeper's buttonhole. You know, if he's a good keeper, he catches that. So it's just the fact that in the second half, he's in pretty much the same spot every time, but the keeper's improved throughout the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to have to take the risk of putting it in that area and hope that the players basically hold off the keeper, put him uncomfortable enough so then it's a really easy nodding, like Tark said. You know, we had Ben Mee again with the header that hit the crossbar. And obviously throughout the game, he just got a bit more confident and towards the end was snatching everything. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. And we won one yesterday.
Yeah, that's true. George, where did you sit with... because obviously it was a very early goal, which was great for us as well. And it felt very nice cheering a goal at Turf. And we didn't manage to do that against Liverpool. So I was very much looking forward to that. There's a lot of talk not in all corners of the press. Some are talking about it and some aren't. Talking about the controversy around the Tarki goal. It's a funny one, really, because when I first saw it, I was like, nah, there's nothing in that. And like, that's absolutely fine. Brighton are obviously going up in arms because they do. They haven't lost their dramatic touch in lockdown. I saw that. But in other respects, when it went to VAR, we saw that overruled a lot last season. But VAR very comfortable now, just saying, no, actually, there's nothing in that. Goal stands. Did you share that, I guess?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant from VAR. And I think what you saw in the Euros over the summer, how good VAR can be when used right by the officials. You know, it's always been the rules and the officials which are the issue, not VAR, so to speak. But I thought Match of the Day spoke brilliantly on this last night on the Talks push. And both Ian Wright and Alan Shearer both said, absolutely not a foul for me. Because what you had was Brighton player, it was Morpay, who's a right little cheat anyway. He's a proper little sod. But he was literally just staring Tarks down.
Allegedly. Can we just not completely like scandalize it? I don't want first episode back, I'm getting sued by Premier League footballers. You know, George Poole speaks personally and does not share the thoughts of the non-Liverpool
cast. In my opinion, Neil is not at the top of my Christmas card list.
Neil Morpay is a cheat and he'll Brighton and get relegated.
Oh my God, what are you doing today?
You are a cheat.
That's Richard's opinion.
Okay. Moving on.
He wasn't looking at the ball. He wasn't looking at when Westwood was taking it. His one role was to block Tarkowski. So, and the way Tarks is really good in his post-match interview on Match of the Day, he said, if there's a guy there and he's just there to block me, I have every right to push him and to do what I can to block him from blocking me. And that's exactly what Alan Shearer said on Match of the Day. He said, absolutely fine with that. And it's really good that there's a lot more physicality been allowed by referees this year. You've seen there's been a lot of changes with the handball rule, with the offsides. And it's just given the attacking sides the leeway more often. And I think the more often that happens, the more pleasant experience it is for a fan. Because I wasn't even thinking about VAR when the goal went in yesterday. It was just pure joy.
Absolutely.
Can I just add something there? I don't know if you will come on to it. How bad was that referee?
Awful. Oh my God.
After what, going back to the, you know, we can talk about VAR, which does seem better. After watching the Euros and how in control and decisive the referees was, that clown we had referee was absolutely horrendous. The inconsistency of his decisions was absolutely shocking. Like Taylor ran through, He could have been sent off. He basically pulled him back on the edge of the box. Nothing. Tarkowski wins a clean header. It's a yellow card. I just thought he just completely lost control of the game. From that first minute when the Brighton players surrounded him, a strong referee would have said, get away, it's a goal. Yeah. Get on with it. He looked like a little schoolboy around.
Yeah.
You know, around a bunch of bullies. And it and he let him manipulate him. I just thought I just needed to get out there because I just thought he was terrible yesterday for both teams as well, so we're not just being biased.
Yeah, no, I agree as well. And I thought the consistency point was a big one for me. I think when I just completely wrote him off at the end was the decision towards the end. I think there were a couple of reds that he could have given yesterday. There was that pull on Taylor, I think, quite late on, which I thought was shocking. That was the one that was the free kick outside of the goal, wasn't it? I thought he missed that. But the one for me was, and forgive me, I can't remember which Brighton player it was, we'd won a free kick when they were trying all their best to like cut the game out and delay and do time wasting, which, as a quick side note, I have zero problem with. There were so many fans across our seats yesterday were whinging at Brighton about them trying to see the game out of 2-1. I was like, hang on a minute, do we not deliver the masterclass of doing that? Like, you can't whinge about that when we do it like the best in the league for that. Anyway, that's a quick side point. But he booted the ball away and it nearly went into the cricket field stand, which is an absolute yellow card. Okay. Was it Mopey? Oh, thank you. Anyway, but he did. Mopey, I couldn't remember who it was, but Mopey booted the ball away, which is a yellow card. And the ref bottled it. He didn't give him a yellow card because Mopey was already on a yellow and it would have been a red. And listen, I don't know how true this is because some fans sometimes do exaggerate in the heat of the moment. But I did hear a few people saying that he did start to get his card out and then literally just changed his mind. But that for me was just, I just wrote him off at that point. And I just thought, and Rich, you're absolutely right. It's the strength of character. It's like you are dealing with elite professional sportsmen in this league, some of the best in the world, in a very high stakes league. Not only do you have to be technically excellent, but you have to be strong of character. And it's just depressing as hell that after, 10 years or so now, we're still in a situation where we've got the best league in the world with all the money in the world and a really poor standard of referees. And VAR has made it more difficult because they're too scared to make a decision, which is weird because you think it'd be the other way around because they can make a decision and it gets corrected by VAR. Rich, staying with you, actually, I just want to pick up on that point that George made about VAR and the success of it in the Euros. I completely agree with that in that yesterday just felt so much better. And I think for me, the Premier League run under a phenomenal amount of pressure this season to increase the performance and the, reduce the controversy of VAR following such a successful Euros. And part of that we're being told is that they will be less inclined to overrule decisions like yesterday and start being quite particular. And I think that's very welcome.
Yeah, good. Yeah, definitely. I think if it's an obvious mistake from the referee, then obviously overrule it. But I think there needs to be some more referee discretion within it. You know, we watch, well, certainly myself, watch a lot of other sports involving, obviously, like video, you know, replays, cricket, rugby, etc. And they do go with the on-field decision more often. But one thing they need to do, even that decision yesterday took a little bit of time. They've got to be quicker with the decision-making. You know, if it's like you were saying, Natalie, if it's not clear and obvious after 20, 30 seconds, get on with the game. That's what I thought in the Euros. It was quick. It was efficient. Even yesterday, we were standing there in the stands waiting, you know, to see if it was a goal or not. But hopefully VAR will be better this year. I think VAR is best used when you don't notice it. And it became... And it just became literally in most games last season a massive, massive talking point. You know, there was a few games last season where handballs were getting given and goals were getting disallowed, which was just ridiculous. So fingers crossed that will continue. Like I said, I think the goal yesterday was perfectly fine. There was a bit of a push from Tarkowski, but like George said, you know, you can't just stand in somebody's way. And then not expect to get barged out the way a little bit. Fingers crossed it continues to be used appropriately and efficiently.
Yeah, I think another rule change that I missed yesterday, and I only noticed it a couple of after a couple of subs. Has there been a real change now about players not needing to leave the field when they've been injured? I missed that in the summer, which I am absolutely delighted about. I think that was a stupid rule. But yeah, I think that has changed, hasn't it, this season?
It certainly has. I can't claim to have read the referee's rule book. Maybe a few years ago, but I haven't read the updated one. That's the issue. But yeah, it appears so, because there was definitely a couple of occasions in the first half where certainly Basuma went down, and another Brighton lad went down, and they didn't have to leave the field to play. But there's been nothing in the media really about that. But I suppose it's not really a headline grabber, that is it?
No, but it is a good rule to get done, because it's. I always felt that when I was watching it. You think, well, it was brought in, was that rule, to stop time wasting, which was in theory great. But all then that happened was is that the team that were not at fault got punished twice. It's like, well, you get fouled, you get the free kick, you're in an attacking position, and the player who's been fouled while you're in said attacking position has to leave the field, which is just dumb. George, just a quick heads up there. It's like, you're our new Claret's Trust representative, so, you know, you're just going to have to read the rules, because I'm going to call on you for all judgments on rules and anything formal. So, you know, no pressure. Before we move on, just to have a look at what kind of went wrong from the 60th minute onwards, which I think, considering the social media feeds last night, there are a couple of very obvious ones that fans feel. A quick note, George, on JBG, who yesterday was just outstanding.
He was absolutely brilliant. He really was. I thought, you know, obviously going into the season, we've got real worries. You know, we've got literally two wingers in the squad, and one of them's Goodmanson, who is perennially injured, which is just a real shame, because he's one of our most unappreciated players in the past 5 years. You know, ever since he signed, he's got an incredible amount of assists per game. You know, every time he plays, he's effective. And he's got that right wing slot just on lock if he's fit. And it was so good to see yesterday. I think he stepped up another level. He had the confidence right from the off to take on a man, to cut inside two people when they're coming at him. He was really on it, attacking-wise. All he was thinking about was, how can I get the ball into that goal? Whether it was running at his fullback, whether it was cutting inside and taking a fullback away so then Lawton can overlap. An example where he could have played it through to Wood, who was running sort of towards the corner, but instead he held on for it for a second longer, hit it with his right foot, obviously his weaker foot, and unfortunately it hit the post. But I think all first half, he was really on it, and the same for McNeil. Both really dangerous, putting in some superb crosses. Yeah. And with Wood up front, he can feed on that. And I think it's just a real positive going into the season. If Goodmanson can stay fit, and obviously it's a big if, but he's had a full summer behind him, he wasn't in the Euros or anything like that, he'd be a brilliant, brilliant player for us this year.
A quick note on that though, Rich. There's strong suggestions in the press, particularly local press, that we're signing Maxwell Cornet from, is it Lyon? Where it's coming from? Which, as a quick aside, by the way, somebody around me yesterday said that if we do sign him and he isn't given squad number 99, then we'll be hugely disappointed, which I just thought was just a hilarious bit of banter. That would be very amusing. I also would be very, very funny to see all of the overseas Premier League fans just not understanding that reference at all, which would be very funny. I got derailed then with talk of ice cream. If we do sign him, Rich, does he come in behind JBG? Is JBG first choice, or does JBG get dropped?
Going back to you can't. When was the last time it was actually 99p? You go to an ice cream van now, it's like £2.50 for an ice cream and a coke.
Oh my God, yeah. Very quick pause here. And you know,
that's more important, isn't it, than Burnley?
You know, it certainly is.
Collection of ice cream.
We like to be a community podcast, and we like to bring you groundbreaking and cutting edge news. And I put the rise in ice cream 99 ice creams up there with the rise of Freddo prices as well. It's one of the scandals of our generation. Anyway, yes, going back. Football.
Who are we talking about?
No, I'm joking. I knew you'd got yourself doing it then.
Maxwell Solero.
He's fab.
it'd be a great signing, though, wouldn't it? It's an exciting signing. I seen someone tweeted it'll be nice to have a change of somebody who signed, because he's a good bloke who lives in Alderley Edge, which seems to be our main remit for the last few years. You know, but it is an Listen, I think if Goodmanson's playing well, of course, he probably doesn't get straight into the team anyway, and I didn't think he would do, because he needs to get Dyche fit and all that stuff. But you know, I'd really like to. I know Dice loves 4-4-2. I just think sometimes in games we lose so much in midfield. You know, saying this to Jota, to you know a few people, I'd quite like to see McNeil playing that number 10, and then he can maybe play Corney on the left, especially games of you know, yesterday against Brighton, you know, we just got overhauled in midfield. You know, I know people were, you know, were calling Cork again like they do yesterday, which I think is unfair, the criticism he gets. But when, I don't care who you are, when you've got two midfielders playing against three, it's always difficult. I know we've possibly gone off track here a little bit, but yeah, it would be a great signing, wouldn't it? And it could be like a bit of a game changer to us, like, you know, like Defoe, wasn't he coming and really added that quality? You know, I think it's a signing that really gets off his feet. Fingers crossed he does come, you know, and we don't end up with like someone from the Championship like Jed Wallace, which would be a major, you know, disappointment. And that's nothing against Jed Wallace. He could come in and do okay for us. But I think this would be a statement signing.
Yeah,
I seen yesterday afternoon that he's actually been picked in the Lyon squad for today.
Oh, really?
Which I thought, I don't know about. I know George is going to wave at me here. So go on, George, carry on and get anything
I
more.
I think,
wrong.
I might be the one wrong here, but I'm pretty sure I translated that tweet. I'm pretty sure it was one of the local journalists who said, you know, when Borden says, oh, expected lineup for tomorrow.
Leon actually put him from the official website in the squad list.
Apparently, he wasn't like, what do you call it, when he wasn't not subscribed into the squad. Do you know what I mean? Registered,
like,
yeah. But
my thing is, if we've had a bid accepted, we'd come through on Friday when it started coming out. So possibly this bid got accepted maybe on a Thursday or Friday morning, and he's having talks over the weekend about
true,
a deal. Surely wouldn't be in the squad.
Abraham,
maybe I'm wrong. And
unless
that far ahead, and maybe not that far ahead.
I wonder if it's a tactic. I wonder if it's a tactic, Rich, because I mean, you know what we're like, you know, we like to eke every bit of value out of it. And there's always,
I've heard the bid was accepted, so
personal terms haven't been done yet. So if we're messing around with personal terms, it's not done. Leon might genuinely have a bit of a wobble and think, Jesus, if this falls through and the player can't do this, we need to get him registered because he's not going to go anywhere else. So I'm going to try not to reach too much into that. Might just be a safety precaution.
Well, they play at 12 today, so it'll be interesting to see at 11 o'clock if he's in the team.
There you go. As we record this podcast, it's 10:39 on Sunday morning. And for some reason, listeners, producer Matt got us all up at a God unearthly time on a Sunday morning to record this week. So actually, it's working quite well. I think we're all very surprisingly alert for first thing Sunday morning. Although, hilariously, listeners, we were supposed to be joined this morning by Tom, who texted us about 2 minutes ago to say that it was a heavy night last night and he has only just woken up. So thanks for your commitment to the podcast, young Tom. He decided to go out last night and get a few too many shandies rather than get up this morning and join us. So
I just say, Natalie, because me and George both know this, Tom's clearly your favourite podcaster. I purposely didn't go to the pub last night so I could wake up for this morning. So
oh my God.
Me and George speak about that, don't we, George?
Yeah,
I got to
Morley last night, but I decided, I've got to get my head down, get a good night's sleep because I've got to get up and podcast in the morning. But Tom clearly doesn't have the same commitment.
That's not true. I'm absolutely devastated that you think that. Gosh, blindsided by this. Tom is absolutely not my favourite podcaster.
You're making it sound like he's your least favourite.
He got picked to do the quiz and nobody else even got consulted.
That's not true. I'm going to find that screenshot. We put it to all of you and you all went, no. Not doing that. Yes, I'm not having that. That is a scandalous slander, Richard Steele. No, I can categorically confirm that Tom is not my favourite podcaster. I love you all equally.
Like any good parent says.
Yeah, exactly. My little boys all around me. I'm like, nope, you're all equal. Although, is Tom the oldest? Maybe he's like the firstborn child. Maybe that's what it is. There's a bit of firstborn favouritism. But no, definitely not. NB4TW, Rich, stop it. Anyway, moving.
Honestly, here's a sample of what my voice sounds like now. Just go out of the shower. A podcast is not happening. I'm sorry. I'm not reliable enough to do Sunday morning.
So in the past 3 minutes, you've outed Tom for missing our recording, and you've called him the oldest of the squad. Poor Tom.
See, it's clearly not my favourite. What can I say? There you go. Anyway, moving on, listeners. We've got we're starting as we mean to on this season. George, I think it's pretty clear from everybody's view who was at that game yesterday that the substitutions won it for him, and it was hugely frustrating for us in that after a very dominant first half display, we could have gone 3-0 up at one point. You know, JBG hit the post, Ben Mee had that header as well, that should have gone in. God, about as close to the line as I think I've ever seen. Potter made two substitutions. He brought, on, and is it Alexei McAllister? Is it pronounced McAllister? Is it McAllister? Is there a gap? I don't even know how to pronounce people's names. But Potter brought both of those on, and they changed the game. George, a luxury that we simply do not have. How are we going to deal with this in terms of our Premier League survival this season? Because we should not have lost that game yesterday, and it was a bad loss. And it was all down to an opposition manager who is one of our competitors having the ability to not only bring fresh legs on, but to bring players on who can change a game and turn round a deficit.
Yeah, see, this is the issue in a nutshell for me, really. Obviously, they scored to make it 1-1, and that was in the 73rd minute. And then quickly after, McAllister. Anyway, whichever it is, the Scottish Argentinian, he scored to make it 2-1. And then our first thought is to bring McNeil off. And OK, he was probably absolutely blowing out of his backside because he didn't check back for either of the goals, may I say. But, you know, he was clearly probably tired. So it was like, right, need to bring McNeil off. Oh, right, look to my bench. Which winger shall I bring on? Should I bring on option A, which is we have zero wingers, or should I bring on option B, which is we have Brownhill who can fake it as a winger if needs be, just like I had to do with Jeff Hendrick a few years ago. And it just screams everything that you need to know about our squad, that Brighton can bring on Adam Lallana, by the way, who we haven't mentioned, brought on Adam Lallana.
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic.
Yep, another guy who just made it tick. You know, they've got all these options on the bench, and they're not amazing options. They're not like real top 10 players, but, you know, really good attacking options for a bottom-half side. Meanwhile, we have to bring on Brownhill, who's a cracking centre-mid, but he's playing out of position on the right wing, and that's our attacking sub. It just says everything you need to know about our lack of squad depth and the fact that we need to get at least Corne over the line and another winger. As well, I'm sure we'll mention Aaron Lennon later. So the reality is we don't have enough to bring off the bench to change a game in that aspect. It's all well and good having four strikers. I like them all. You know, they've all got their own pros and cons about them. But the issue is getting creativity into that side, which isn't going to come from Brownhill on the wing that much. So yeah, it just said a lot about what we need to do this summer.
It's true, and I think we talk about this a lot. You talk about a small squad and you talk about a lack of signings, and we often focus on injuries and suspension and things like that, and maybe having to shuffle the squad a little bit post-game. But I don't think we make enough, Rich, of the fact that this is another impact of this, is that when you've got no options on the bench, you're just hoping that your strategy pre-game works and you've got nothing to change it.
We all love Dyche, don't we? He can't not go blameless for that yesterday. Okay. The sub he made was completely wrong. Bringing Barnes on, who looks like better suited in the Wigan's Veteran League, was to me just completely the wrong. I'm just not having. I know George is a bit different to me. He feels he can still have something to offer. Or, you know, maybe that's the way it sounded last night on our group chat. The way I took it, George, I just don't think he's got anything to offer anymore.
I agree.
I think that drink driving stuff, I didn't like at all. I just thought it was time to let him go in the summer. You know, you've got a really talented young winger coming, young striker coming in there. But we need another striker. But to me yesterday, I just, you know, I said it before about 4-5-1. It was obvious what was happening. Basuma was getting on the ball. Basuma was getting on the ball, who is a very, very good player. You know, you've got Liverpool, United, Real Madrid. I've seen a link with him. He's going to have an excellent career. But, you know, no one got close to him. It's like the Newcastle game last season. St. Maximin's come on. We're getting caught between the lines, and then he goes and scores too. I just think we're winning 1-0, 20 minutes to go. Just get an extra body in midfield. You know, if you're going to bring Jay off, I'd have liked to see Brownhill come on. You know, then even if, you know, we got caught down the left, down our left twice, McNeil wasn't tracking back. You know, maybe bring Peters on for a little, maybe not, I don't know, but I just think his subs were wrong yesterday. You know, you can clearly see they were getting into the game, getting on top of us, finding space. You know, Dice said about the distances went wrong, which is fair enough, and maybe it allowed too much space. But I just thought when Barnes come on, we just lost any shape at all. You know, and then we started hoofing it up to him. The ball was popping off him. I know George said he had people, you know, a few men round him. But you're a professional footballer. It don't matter if you've got men round and control the ball and pass it. That's what you get paid to do. You know, I could play with 10 yards of space, control the ball and pass it 10 yards. You know, you're watching top players, you know, Premier League players, they should be able to control the ball and give decent passes off. There was one ball he did yesterday, which just should have been an easy ball and just went straight through to the goalie. You know, and I don't want to just put the blame at Barnes, but I just thought like that, you know, we can say what we want about options off the bench, but we had better options. And I think when we are winning 1-0 and the game's won, you know, I think we have got to look to pat the midfield a little bit more. You know, that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, and I think we saw a couple of tweets heading our way that very much echoed that. I think Mickey Watson, is it Mickey or Mikey? I never know. Mickey, I'm sorry if it is Mikey. But he said, he echoed that and kind of said that his tweet was an ageing, creaking squad seriously catching up with us. And they can't see out a full 90 minutes. So then you're relying on those substitutions, not just for like, but be able to rotate those squad players, which we don't have. And then Danny Ward also tweeted in response to that and said, well, Brighton were proactive and they made changes from being in a behind position. We were so slow to react and there's none or little quality in those subs. And for me, that Barnes substitution was the absolute epitome of that. It was. We reverted to stereotype and we reverted to old where we suddenly thought, it's like, let's try and defend this. Let's try and hold on to it. We don't seem to make that decision to go out there and try and kill off the game. And it is hugely frustrating. George.
Sorry to add to that quickly, because I know George is Victor fourth choice again now after being outstanding for the second half of last season. I hope not. Vidra.
It better not be, because I think for me that was, I mean, I was fully expecting him to start yesterday alongside Barnes as well, Wood as well, sorry. And when Jay got the nod, I was just like, well, maybe Vidra's just a little bit behind him in terms of fitness. But it drives me mad. He must have his justification for it. But the way that Vidra's been treated since he's been here, it's hardly any surprise that he wants to leave. It's just like, I'll never understand that. George, for you quickly, because I know you've got to jump off in a minute, so we're gonna release you in a sec, and me and Rich will close out. Me and my favourite podcaster, Rich, will see out the show. Does Aaron Lennon do anything for that? Because a lot of people are fuming that we might be re-signing Aaron Lennon. To me, I don't necessarily mind it, providing that it's just a squad bolster. If it's plan A and that's our only option, then that's disgraceful. But does Lennon, if we had Lennon on the bench yesterday, is that a better substitution for bringing McNeil off than McBarnes? I vote yes.
Yeah, it certainly is. The issue is, right, you've got two camps, and like obviously you could have got camp like, oh, Ashley Barnes is past it, or he's not impacting the game, or the squad's creaking. You know, it is aging. But you can be on, you can be saying, I think Ashley Barnes still got a role to play. And you can say that, and then you can also admit that the squad is aging and needs a complete reset. But the issue is that we've been left in this situation by years of underfunding. So now the squad is, you know, an aging squad, but you can't now change that overnight. I still think Barnes has got a role to play. I think maybe on the Vidra thing, I think it's important to mention, obviously, he was away this summer at the Euros. He came back late. He had his marriage, so he came back late. So, you know, maybe it's just the minutes in the legs. Same with Wood. Wood came out for the Olympics, so maybe that's why he didn't have as much to do in the second half with the game. And I think Aaron Lennon, look, at the end of the day, I love the ball because I love all the players who played in Europe for Burnley. You know, he represented Burnley in Europa League, played against Olympiacos, super. And he's a decent squad player. And the issue is, he's not a progressive signing at all. If you want to sign a brilliant winger, it's not Aaron Lennon. You know, he's probably 34 now. But we need him. Like, we need him. We're maybe going to sign this one winger, Maxwell Cornet. Then the issue is we've still got, only got three wingers. We've already spent nigh on 30 million between Collins and Cornet. We need Aaron Lennon. It's as simple as that, really.
Yeah. And
he's a decent squad player for me. You can bring him off the bench. He'll have an impact. He's got that nous about him. Okay, he's not as quick as he used to be. He doesn't take on a fullback, but he knows how to get into positions. A lot of times, he's got into really good positions for us and sneaked in at that back post. That sort of attacking move, which Brownhill just doesn't have that mindset up top because he's a centre mid at the end of the day. So needs must we sign Aaron Lennon, and I'll support him when he gets here. But it does say a lot about our squad. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Very quick one on that, though. I think the Claret's Report tweet yesterday stated that, and this is for you, Rich, because I think you probably have a view on this, in that it doesn't actually matter if we get Cornet, Dyche will still play players out of position and give tricky players just 8 minutes. And I think that was a bit of a dig at the Vidra substitution again yesterday. Does Dyche have to have faith in the players that are there to do the job that they're there to do?
End of the day, if we're paying a lot of money for him, he's got to become a really valued member. No, I don't agree with that necessarily. I think once obviously Defoe got up and running with his injuries, he played every game, didn't he? You know, when he was a key part of that. You know, it may take a month or so for him to get used to it. You know, it is an exciting signing, but I think people's going to expect Cornet to come in and all of a sudden be like Riyad Mahrez on the wing and kind of win his games for nothing, which I don't think will happen. I'm happy with let's sign in Lennon. If we got Cornet and Lennon and then Collins, that's not too bad of a window. I think what it highlighted to me as well yesterday, which has been forgotten about, we need a better player in central midfield. We need to win. I know they cost a lot of money. You know, look how good we was with Defoe. Defoe literally took us from a relegation team to a team that comes seventh. I know he was a top talent. But if you look at Bissouma, imagine if we had Bissouma in our team, Natalie,
how much better we could be.
Because he's not just high quality on the ball. Every time we tried to press him yesterday, and other players give the ball away for Brighton. I can't remember him giving the ball. You know, you said about first half. Maybe it didn't have the effect, but he didn't give the ball away under pressure.
You're absolutely right.
And you've got that goal. He got it, and I was saying foul him. It drove through the heart of our midfield because they don't have the legs, you know, because he's a young, exciting player. He's drove through the midfield, and he's played a fantastic good ball, and they've scored. You know, that's something we're really, really lacking. Obviously, the wingers, their priority, and rightly so at the moment. But that's, I think, another area. And I know we've talked about Maitland-Niles. I don't think we can afford him on a fee, but say if we did manage to maybe get him on a loan deal and play him central midfield, I think he'd be a really good signing for us. You know, Cork and Westwood have done unbelievable for this football club. But, you know, we have got to look at soon, replacing these players or giving them more competition. I was surprised Brownhill didn't start yesterday, to be honest, because I thought he's looked really
sharp. Who's
your favourite
team? Do you play him with Westwood or do you play him with Cork?
Do you know what? I honestly think I think it's much of a muchness. I really do. Okay. I think Westwood's the number one because I think he can create and I think he's got the legs. Cork's better on the ball and he's tidy and he doesn't give it away. But you've seen sometimes as the game gets on, like I said before, I don't care who you are. You know, you can have, say, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of two quality midfielders. If you're playing against three and you get overrun, it's very, very difficult. But there were times last season where we didn't create much at all because I felt Westwood and Browner was too similar. I honestly think it's much of a muchness. That's why I'm saying I think we need a quality midfielder who can go in next to one of those two, who can really, any of those three, who can then really bring the standard up. You know, look how good Cork was in that season. We come seventh, but he still had Defoe next to him. We had Hendrick in mid, played number 10.
Yeah, I think, George, you're a big fan of Cork and Westwood, though, aren't you? I think you had a point to finish upon.
I just think I really like Cork and Westwood, and I can see why people have an issue because obviously they don't create an enormous amount. But I think if we sign this Maxwell Cornet, Rich touched on it before, we can go to a 4-5-1 because the issue is people are going to expect this Cornet to come in and you're thinking, right, let's get him in the first team. But then you think about it logically and you think, well, A, he's a left winger slash left back. So we're not dropping Charlie Taylor. He's brilliant. Not dropping Dwight McNeil because he's brilliant. So then you think, well, how are you going to get him in the team? Well, you play a 4-5-1, which Dyche has, you know, reverted to quite a lot over the years, especially the Europe season, Jeff Hendrick and Scott Arfield. You put McNeil in the 10 role behind the striker. You put Corney out on the left wing. And then you can play Cork and Westwood as your two really solid midfielders doing the engine room. And then you've got McNeil ahead of them, which Rich was obviously touching upon. You need them three midfielders in there to overrun a team and create stuff. So I just think there's real potential for that. And also on the Corney thing, people are complaining about the lack of transfers, which I think is completely justifiable. But think about it this way. If we sign Corney, right, it's about 15 million. You know, we've add-ons and what have you. About 15 million. That's 15 million on Collins, 15 million on Corney. That's 30 million in the summer. That's more than Burnley have ever spent in a summer window. So I think that just gives a lot of perspective to it, really.
And we're still massively behind the curve.
No, you're true. Because of years of underfunding. But the issue is, Pace can't change that squad reset overnight. Just can't happen.
That's why I think if we got a really good... I know sometimes they don't work and they maybe haven't worked as well for us, but they can work. If we got a really good loan player to come in a midfield option, I think that would be good for us. I think George was spot on there. And then McNeil played number 10. You don't have to worry about him going back as much the other way. Because I don't, you know, I've seen people coming on Twitter again, McNeil's not trying and all this. It's nonsense. I just don't think he's got the defensive awareness, and McNeil's being asked to be a left back, a left midfielder, a central midfielder. You know, he's being asked to do everything for the team.
A lot of pressure on very young shoulders.
He was arguably at fault for both the two goals. I don't think it's a lack of effort though. You know, and that's maybe where you're looking at it with Dyche. You know, could he bring it? What I thought odd about that sub was he brought McNeil off at 1-1, not at 1-0.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That was just like, bewildered me that even swap it over and put Goodmanson. But
no, yeah, I just think I'll just say before I have to go get my train back down south, is that I think McNeil was, to be honest, for me, at fault for both goals. You know, the issue of checking back, it really did leave Charlie Taylor exposed. So I know you're going to talk about the two goals later. That's my 2 pence worth there, or 2 cents. And I think, you know, if we bring Corney in and McNeil goes to a 10 roll, as you say, Mitch, it just frees him up. I think there's a lot of criticism of Charlie Taylor yesterday, but I think it is important to remember that he was exposed both times, and there's only so many men you can track. You can either go to the man who's got the ball, or you can follow the guy who's overlapping. And both times he stayed with the man, the overlap was on, and McNeil wasn't there, which, you know, he just doesn't have that nous, as you say, Rich, and he's probably tired. So, yeah, but I'll leave you guys for this week.
Yeah.
Been nice to be back on.
Yeah, thanks, George. Cheers. Don't get your train.
Safe journey back, pal.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that one. I'm going to start wrapping up as well, actually, Rich, because I think this is a bit of a funny one, really, because we genuinely could be talking for another half an hour on this, and I'm conscious of not going massively over. But I think he's right. I think the pressure on McNeil's shoulders is just too much. You know, we expect him to do every single role, and he seems to get a lot of grief when he doesn't perform there. And I think a lot of that is fan frustrating because he is perceived to be our only talent in that area, our only, obviously, now JBG's back, it's better. Losing Brady as well in the summer has not helped that because he's literally got all of that on his shoulders. There's nobody who can come in and give him a break for the last 20 minutes. But I do like the idea of him slotting into the middle in a 4-5-1. I think that kind of excites me quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. I do like the 4-4-2 and it can work, but I think this is what there are a lot of times where we get overrun in midfield. What teams have been really clever for doing now, because we have our two banks of four and they play an extra body in midfield, they put a man in the gap between the midfield and the defence, and he's always free. There's no one to pick him up. And when you've got that player there, almost in that hole spot, he's got options. He can drive at the defence, like St Maximum did last season. The Sheffield United game last season, that happened when they scored and, you know, they got in between that gap. Yesterday, what Brighton did, Bissouma drove through the middle when there was space, definitely for the first goal. And then he had that ball out wide. And then there's a 2-on-1, you know, because we're not getting back, you know, because McNeil's maybe not tracking back as much. So I just think the way modern football's going, I do think you need to add that extra player in midfield. You know, people, you looked at all the teams in the Euros who were playing the highest level of football. Not one of them played 4-4-2. So I think if we did get Corney in and we can move McNeil inside, obviously if Corney's played left back, you know, he can obviously defend a little bit too. And I think it would help Taylor a little bit more. And I like us playing 4-4-2 because, you know, I've looked at the squad this season and obviously with Collins coming in and we've got two really good attacking fullbacks. I think like a 5-3-2 where McNeil can still play in the number 10 and you can have your two midfielders behind him and you can still have your two strikers, which Dyche likes. So that might be an option where we might go to.
That feels very modern for Dyche.
Yeah, well, but that's what it is. You know, I think this is the reason why he's not got another job. Yesterday, after 65 minutes, they got down that left, our left, twice, and they didn't score. And you're thinking, change it. You know, whatever you do, shore up that left-hand side of defence. And I think we would have won the game, and he didn't. And I still think with his substitutions, he is reactive rather than proactive. I think what Dyche is brilliant at, I think I watched his press conference the other day when there's a lot of panic. He's very calm. He's very assured. He's obviously an unbelievable leader and he gets players buying into what he can do. But I think his weaknesses and why he's still at Burnley is that he's not got enough tools in his toolbox. And that's what's frustrating for me yesterday. You know, maybe people might come here and go, oh, it's easy to say this now, but I actually thought it was pretty obvious what was going to happen. Once about 65 minutes would come, and from, you know, just get that extra body in midfield or get an extra man at the back. I remember that season, one of the seasons, he used to bring Tarkov when Keane was still there, he used to bring Tarkovsky on and put him in midfield. We don't seem to be able, you know, like a couple of seasons ago, 1-0 up at Turf Moor, game over. You know, we might be on the back foot a little bit, but we didn't, you know, we got cut open twice in the last 20 minutes, just blatant,
yeah,
you know.
Frustrating.
And this has become a pattern, hasn't it? You know, Southampton 2-0 up, Newcastle were winning. You know, so it's just a little bit frustrating there. And just to add, Corney is starting for Lyon. So I don't know what says. I thought that for me is a little bit of an alarm bell if he's supposed to be in talks. But again, we'll see.
Yeah. Are you worried? Final word before we wrap it up.
I think you've got to be realistic with the situation from both sides, haven't you? There's no point panicking too much now. From my common consensus and speaking to people, people aren't panicking just yet, but they're just disappointed because they feel they've thrown away points yesterday. And, you know, and it would have been brilliant to get us off to a good start. And you can go to, you know, now you're looking at a tough run of fixtures and you're thinking, you know, where are we going to pick some points or it's going to be difficult to pick points up. But on the other hand, you know, you're looking at our squad and everything like that, and you got to think, of course, it's going to be another long season. Even if we get Corney in or another winger, we're still short in other areas. So I'm still optimistic with our nous and know-how. But yeah, fingers crossed. Again, Alan Nixon, I know some people may don't tweet him. He said, Burnley, Corney offer at 14 million, but only 12 guaranteed. Lyon want 15 close, but no cigar at this point. So maybe that's why he's starting. So,
but play the fifth. This is what frustrates me about our transfer window. That to me, it's like 1 million, just pay it.
I know, exactly. Just pay the money. Well, hopefully, if we are in talks, you know, surely for the sake of a million, we're not going to not do it. So yeah.
Yeah, good. Right, well, let's wrap that up there because otherwise I'm going to go on one and we're going to talk for an hour and a half podcast, which is not ideal for anybody. So we're back, team. Thank you to George and to Rich for a fantastic episode where we analysed that disappointing defeat and we managed to get a little bit of uplifting stuff in there. It's not all doom and gloom, listeners. It's a disappointing start to the season, but it was a long way to go. So fingers crossed we can find our groove. My thanks as ever go to everybody else who contributed to making this podcast, to producer Matt, who, even though he did get us up on an early hour on a Sunday morning, and hilariously, we lost Tom because of drunken behaviour. We still love him for getting the podcast together. So thank you, Matt. We've got some new podcast music this season. You will have noticed that the feel of the podcast is a little different this year. Thank you for Ban Joyce, who have always provided our historic podcast music. That was very much appreciated. But we've refreshed this season, and our music this season is provided to us by your local musician, George Gaskill, who has kindly written and donated the podcast music. Thank you, George. But my thanks finally go to you, the listeners, for downloading and listening to this episode. Your support after all of these years is still very much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. Dave and I will be back on Friday night with a preview show looking ahead to Liverpool, and the rest of the team will be back for the main analysis show next Tuesday. Don't forget to subscribe to the Known and Ever newsletter. If you can follow that at knownandever.substack.com, and we will see you next time. I've been Natalie Bromley. Until next time.